Is this thing on? Yeah. This is Gravy Bones Johnson. I am the legendary blues player from Tupelo, Mississippi. And I am being your guest podcaster this week on this here podcast known as Victims of Fun. We got some smooth blues playing in the background. And I'm going to tell you today about the history of the blues as I sees it, and all about my world famous career as the greatest blues man that ever lived. But first, I'm supposed to give a shout out to the people that host this podcast. And you got these soulful brothers at Anchor.fm. And according to this here information I'm reading, if you go on their website, you can download all of the things you need to create your own podcast. And you could be on the air just like Gravy Bones Johnson. Maybe you be talking about the blues. Maybe you be talking about soul. Maybe you be talking about dubstep, in which case you be a fool. Great thing about Anchor, it's very easy to use. Even Gravy Bones Johnson can use Anchor to create his own podcast if he wanted to. All the tools are right there at your fingertips. It's literally push a button and starts talking. And they will distribute it to many, many fine podcasting peoples like Spotify. You can also make money off of this. You could get some mad bank with your podcast. They will hook you up with advertisers, and all you gotta do is create a commercial for it, play it, and y'all ass get paid. Another great thing about Anchor is you could download it to your Apple phone or your Android, and you can podcast on the go. So if you out taking a road trip from maybe Tupelo, Mississippi to Kansas City, you could podcast on the way. Maybe you stop in at some unknown juke joint and see some red hot blues being played, and you could podcast it all about it. It's literally as easy as touching one button, and you could be live on the air like Gravy Bones Johnson. I'm also supposed to thank the fine folks at Seagate for building this here SSD external drive. Apparently, the audio for Victims of Fun is held on this thing. Has a very high transfer rate from what I've been told. I'm also supposed to thank the people at Blue Microphones, the exclusive microphone of Victims of Fun. This thing looked like a giant snowball sitting in my face, but it seems to be a very good microphone, very solidly built. And lastly, I'm supposed to thank the fine folks at Apple. I got this beautiful, beautiful Apple laptops in front of me. Apparently, it's a MacBook Air M1, and it takes care of all your podcasting needs for Victims of Fun. So now I got that out of the way, I'm supposed to be the guest podcaster this week. Let me tell you a little bit something about Gravy Bone Johnson. I'm sure y'all know all about me, because I am world famous. You see, I'm the guy that taught Leadbelly how to play. I taught B.B. King how to play. Okay? I taught the original Porkchop how to dance. All of the great blues is from Gravy Bones Johnson. Now, you see, people say, well, Gravy Bones, how can that be possible? Dead Belly and all them folks lived like 100 million years ago. You ain't that old. Ain't nobody need to know how old Gravy Bones Johnson is. Now, I did not stand at a crossroads and makes a deal with the devil for eternal youths. I just takes care of myself. You see, the blues keeps me young. You see, the blues, if you keep it inside you, it gonna eat your soul. It gonna tear you apart. So you got to let it out. Kind of like you got a big old zit on your forehead. You gonna let it sit there and get bigger and bigger and builds up a whole bunch of pressure until your head explode? No! You're gonna pop it, either with your fingers or with a needle, and you're gonna relieve that there pressure. That's the same thing with the blues. You got to let the blues out. You got to let the pain and the torment of your soul out. You see, when a woman done you wrong, you got to write it down and sing about it. When you feeling down, when you feeling blue, you got to write it down and sing about it. You don't keep it inside yourself, okay? You gotta sing about it. You gotta get up there and tell the world that a no good woman done you wrong. And that it wasn't your fault. And that's why you ran out with nothing but your suitcase and a pair of dungarees. Maybe she'd be chasing you with a kitchen knife. You shouldn't have slept with her sister. But I'm not talking about Gravy Bone Johnson history. Maybe that's what you be doing. Yeah, another things I need to see is anything you read on the internet about Gravy Bones Johnson's background and the things he's done is a bunch of lies. You see, the truth about Gravy Bones Johnson is very, very difficult to explain unless you got that blues going on in your soul. Now, what exactly is the blues? I'm glad you asked me that. I know somebody did. See, the blues is that feeling you get when a woman done you wrong. Now, it don't matter how you behaved because, you know, you're a man. But a woman done you wrong because of what you did. Maybe she threw you out. Maybe she said you a no good suit wearing floppy dungaree looking old man. It don't matter. It's still the blues. Now, the thing about the blues is all universal, if you will. So, if you're sitting somewhere like in Tupelo, Mississippi, or Greensboro, or Memphis, or Mobile, Alabama, or New Orleans, or Kansas City, or Cleveland, or Bangor, Maine, the blues is gonna be the same. Maybe the localities is different. Maybe the circumstances is different. Maybe the situations is different. But the feeling of the blues, it is the same. It crosses state lines. And I'm pretty sure it crosses country lines. I guarantee you right now, in the middle of the deserts in Mongolia, there's some Mongolian ox, you know, ox keeper or ox herder sitting there probably saying to himself, "My woman done me wrong. He got the blues." There's probably some guy in North Korea's sitting there at a DMZ zone saying to himself, "Man, my woman done me wrong. He's got the blues." You know, even animals can have the blues. Have you ever seen a dog that's kind of down? Well, that dog's got the blues. So maybe his female done him wrong. And he's got the blues, you see. The blues is universal. Now, Gravy Bones Johnson was born the son of sharecroppers in Tupelo, Mississippi. I ain't gonna tell you when, because y'all don't be needin' to know how old Gravy Bones Johnson is. Okay? That there is what they call a trades secret. But needless to say, my parents were sharecroppers in Tupelo, Mississippi. And one day my mother's out there, you know, sharing crops. And next thing you know, I falls onto the dirt. And my mother cleans herself up, cleans me up, hands me a pair of shears, and I'm sharecropping alongside of them. And I'm only 2 hours old. And it was from that point on that I had the blues. I only went to fourth grade. And the reason I only went to fourth grade is my shoes fell apart. And we didn't have enough money for new shoes. I wasn't going to go to school with no shoes. And that's when I wrote my first blues song. When I was a young kid, I wrote the I Ain't Got No Shoes blues. And it was available on the very first albums I recorded, which was called Butter, Biscuits, and Gravy. The I Got No Shoes blues was the first song that Gravy Bones Johnson ever made. And it was about having no shoes, having to go to school. That's why I didn't go. Ain't nobody gonna give no time to no little kid with no shoes. So I started playing the harmonica. I found a harmonica on the side of the road. It was all busted up and rusted and had to get a tetanus shot, but it worked. And I taught myself how to play harmonica. See, I would sneak into the Blues Cubs in Tupelo back then. You couldn't get in if you was a little kid. Because they were places of people of questionable moral turpitudes. But I would sneak in and listen, and the blues was on fire. The air was on fire, it was electric, and you would hear the blues coming out from the men's and the women's. And I listened to these harmonica players, and just by listening, I picked up how to play the harmonica. And so I started playing harmonica. And I would set up a little bucket on the side of the road that I would sit on. And I made a sign and I took another little bucket for donations. And I would sit there and play as my harmonica. And people would drive by or walk by on their evening strolls and listen to me play harmonica. And sometimes they throw money in my bucket. Then I would take my money home and my no good damn parents take half of my money. But that's besides the point. I still at least had some. And I saved up enough that one day I went and bought myself a brand new harmonica. And I stepped up my harmonica game with my new harmonica. And then I said, you know, Gravy Bones Johnson needs to learn how to play something more than harmonica. So what Gravy Bones Johnson did is Gravy Bones Johnson built his first Diddy Bow. Now, Diddy Bow is a one-string guitar. Usually you build them out of cigar box. So I went and I went to the local stores and I said, "You got any cigar boxes?" And the man was kind enough to give me a cigar box, a Cohiba. So I went to the lumber yards and I said, "I need a piece of wood to build myself a neck and a fretboard for a diddly bow." So they had some scraps lying around and they was kind enough to kind of cut it into the lengths I needed. Got myself some nails from the hardware store. And then I went down to the pawn shop and I said, "I need some guitar strings. Do you have any guitars that are busted that you have for parts?" And the man said, "I got a busted guitar that came in the other day. I was about to throw it out. You can have the strings off of it." So I took the strings off this guitar and I went home and strung up my diddly bow. And I experimented until I found the string note that I wanted. And that was my first diddly bow. And I was so excited. I went and I showed my parents. And you know what they said to me? "You ain't ever gonna be good enough to do anything." Well, let me tell you something. If my diddly bow was made out of metal, I would have bashed their damn skulls in. You see, parents are always gonna be the most critical of you. They's never happy with anything you do. You could be perfect, and they will find time to criticize you. So I should have beat their heads in, but I didn't. I went and I wrote a blues song, and I called it "My Parents Are No Good Sucker Blues." And that was also on my first album. You see, it took me a long time to release my first albums because it would take me 6, 7, 8 months to come up with a song because I was basing it on my life experiences. And so I had my second blues song, and eventually I had enough to where I felt I could start playing these in public. Now I'd go down to the local juke joint. I said, "I'm Gravy Bones Johnson, and I want to play here." And the man said, "You ain't even old enough to get in here, boy." And I said, "I'm old enough to have the blues." And he said, "Somebody as young as you have the blues." And I said, "He ever meet my parents?" And then he looked at me and said, "Oh, I think I understand why you have the blues, because your parents ain't nothing but no good suckers." So he gave me the opening spot on a Saturday night. I could play 2 songs. My first Saturday night, I got up there ready to play the blues. The damn cops raided the place. Yeah, everybody got run out of the club, and I ended up in jails for being underage inside a club where I clearly should not have been. Well, the good thing is, as I was sitting in jail with my harmonica and diddly bow, I started playing because I figured, well, my parents are going to kill me, so I might as well just play till they get here because it'd be the last time I ever do this. All the prisoners are watching me and listening, and they're like, "Damn, boy, you got the blues on fire like nothing we ever seen, and we is hardened criminals." And I played so good that the jailer came up to me and said, "Gravy Bones, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna let you out if you promise not to commit any more crimes like being underage in a place where you certainly wasn't supposed to be." So I said, "I promise I won't ever do that again, officer." So he let me out. 2 weeks later, the juke joint opened up again and Gravy Bones was there on stage playing, because Gravy Bones Johnson don't listen to shit from nobody. Gravy Bones does what he wants. Oh, and you're probably wondering, how did you end up with the name Gravy Bones Johnson? Well, we was so poor that sometimes the only thing we had to eat was gravy and the bones of whatever meat we had the week before. So my mother would make this thing called Gravy Bones. And I just kind of took it from there. Gravy Bones Johnson. Now I am a worldwide household name for anybody that knows anything about the blues. You ask them and you say, who's the best blues man you ever heard? They probably say Led Belly or B.B. King. Well, they is wrong, because it's Gravy Bones Johnson. Oh, now I'm getting a little light that says I gotta go to a commercial. Your regular podcast host will be back. I thank you very much for listening to Gravy Bones Johnson, and I was told that eventually some of my music will be played on this here podcast. I want to thank you all for listening. If you want to email this here podcast, it's at victimsoffun@mail.com. And if you into all that social media stuff, see, Gravy Bones Johnson ain't into social media. Gravy Bones Johnson don't Facebook or tweet or nothing. But apparently this podcast does. And if you want to follow them on Facebook or that Instagrams or that Twitter thing, all you got to do is go on one of them and do a search for Victims of Fun. There they are. They got the same name, cross-platform. You could follow them. And oh, I'm also being signaled that I'm supposed to say that Victims of Fun is very poor and that you should hit the supporter buttons and donate money. Well, why the hell can't they donate money to Gravy Bones Johnson? I got 10 kids I gotta pay for. You should be going giving Gravy Bones Johnson money. I got 10 kids. I don't even know if these kids is mine. I don't recognize half these women that keep saying I have kids. I got women coming up to me all the time saying, Gravy Bones, this is your kid. And I said, that ain't my kid. He's Chinese. What are you going to do? That's the die for Gravy Bones Johnson. Your regular podcast will be back in a minute. Y'all have a good night. And we are back for Victims of Fun. Thank you for Gravy Bones Johnson for filling in for the first half of the podcast. Gravy Bones is a very interesting person, to say the least. And but he does make some pretty good blues music, so there you go. So welcome to Victims of Fun. This is episode 27. And as usual, we are live from Mr. Fujiwara's top ramen shop here in the Chiba district of Tokyo, right across from the Sailor Moon store. For all your Sailor Moon needs, you can come down here and get some Sailor Moon stuff. But so see, we're gonna try to, the reason Gravy Bones was here is I'm trying to mix it up a bit with occasionally having guest podcasters come in and do their thing, because sometimes, you know, I want to just mix up. I don't want people to get bored of just hearing me, because I haven't had any guests yet or any interviews. So sometimes it's good to have people come in and just do half the broadcast. Now, obviously, Gravy Bones was not here in Japan. He did it and just, you know, we set it up and recorded it. And that's the first half of the podcast. And I think it came out good. I'm going to try to get other people to do stuff like that. And gives them a platform to talk about whatever they want to talk about. You know, anything you could do to mix it up. Variety is kind of like the name of the game. And again, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just do a search for Victims of Fun. You'll see us. Same name across all social media platforms. Remember to hit that support button. Throw me some cash. I need the money. I want to buy a mixer and a couple other things. And, you know, I'm thinking of starting a Patreon. I'm starting to pick up an audience. I'm trying to be active on Twitter and interacting with the other podcasters and trying to build up a rapport with people. So, you know, it's tough. It's like, There's probably millions of podcasts, and, you know, what are the odds of somebody making a living from it? They're probably next to impossible, but at least that's what they tell you. See, a lot of times I tend to think that people who are successful at the top of some sort of profession, whether it's an author, a musician, a podcaster, an actor, they always tell you that it's going to be next to impossible. You're never going to make it. I think they're doing that to protect their position at the top, because the less competition they have, the easier it is for them. I guess I can see that point of view, but I'm just not that type of person. Like, if I was, like, one of the best podcasting people on the planet with, like, a huge audience and millions of dollars, I would tell people, listen, this is how I did it. This is how you can do it. You know, competition makes you better. It forces you to become a better podcaster, a better person, a better athlete, a better whatever. When you have no competition, you get lazy, you get complacent, you rest on your laurels, and you get clobbered. And competition pushes you to improve yourself. And not everybody's going to stay at the top of the mountain forever. And you have to accept that. You know, it's like those athletes you see that win a whole bunch of championships and end up as a third stringer somewhere on their fifth team because they refuse to let it go. You see, that I always like when athletes retire at the top of their game, because it's just down from that point on. And then, you know, I wouldn't want to do that. I want people to remember, you know, how good I was, not what I turned into. Like with Muhammad Ali, love him to death, one of the greatest men who ever lived. He should have retired on top, but, you know, he made a couple of comebacks and it was just, shouldn't have done it. The Larry Holmes fight and everything else. Mike Tyson was kind of the same way. He, you know, he's still a devastatingly powerful person, but he's not the Tyson he was when he was young. And, you know, you shouldn't come back for that. It's like when there was talk of Brett Favre possibly coming out of retirement like a year or two ago, because I forget, somebody got injured and they needed a quarterback, and Brett Favre was like, you know, I still keep in shape every day. And everybody's like, no, dude, no. Stay. Nobody wants to see you coming and broken down. You know, just stay away. You know, sometimes it's not good to make a comeback. You know, and you shouldn't. You know, I'd always retire on top. And that way people could remember. You know, it's like I'm a big pro wrestling fan. A huge pro wrestling fan. Growing up, my father and I used to watch it. You know, when we lived in New Jersey growing up. Midnight, Channel 9. WWOR. The World Wrestling Federation. And we used to watch it. And the ring announcer was Joe McGill. And it's funny because back then they would do the announcer Joe McGill would come out and go, this is WWF under the auspices of the New York State Athletic Commission, doctor in attendance at ringside. He'd introduce all the officials and everything, and I'm Joe McGill, and then you went into the matches. And then, you know, you watch that, and that then it turned into NWA. WCW Championship Wrestling from Georgia, Gordon Soley, you know, because when you watched wrestling in the WWF back in the day, you know, you had Backlund and the Samoans, Captain Lou, Freddie Blassie, Grand Wizard, Ken Patera, Pat Patterson, Gorilla Monsoon, Johnny Rods and Jose Estrada, Tony Garea, Larry Zbysko, Bruno Sammartino, you had all those guys, and then you watched wrestling from Florida or wrestling from Georgia. You had Flair, you had Dusty, you had Blackjack Lanza, Blackjack Mulligan, Harley Race, Baron Von Raschke, Kevin Sullivan, Buzz Sawyer. You had all those guys. Two completely different styles. The Northern style is different from the Southern style. Southern style was called wrestling, where the Northern style was wrestling. That's, you know, they had different ways of doing things. And so I grew up with all that, those type of things. And, you know, I remember as I got older, not all of them, but some of the guys who were big in the late 60s, early 70s in WWF and Georgia Championship Wrestling, Florida, you know, type of thing, Mid-Atlantic, they hung on too long, you know. And that was kind of sad to me, because I remember, like, in WWF, I remember somebody like Tony Garea. Tony Garea was, like, one of the most decorated tag team wrestlers ever. Teamed with a lot of different people to win the tag team title. But then, you know, as he got older, you know, he lost a bunch of steps. He started jobbing. Jobbing means losing, putting people over. And he was good at it, and he still got paid. But when you're a fan of the guy and you see them getting beat in like 2 minutes, it's rough. Tommy Rich. Tommy Rich was at one point the hottest thing in Georgia, Florida, Mid-Atlantic, Mid-South area. Held the NWA title for 7 days. Because they wanted to make him champion to make him even more... Because he was an underdog. He wasn't built like a lot of the wrestlers back then. And the idea of putting the belt on him was... so that the fans could get behind him as he chased it again. Because he beat Harley Race, held it for a week, lost it again. And then was red hot trying to get the belt back. So, you know, as opposed to somebody like Dusty Rhodes, who never really needed the belt. I mean, he had a couple shorter reigns, but he never needed it because he was so huge. He didn't need the world championship to solidify his legendary status. He was bigger than the title. Tommy Rich benefited from it because he could chase it again. And it was always like, oh my God, is Tommy ever going to get it back? Well, you go from that to him jobbing in WCW, and it was kind of sad. I mean, Dick Slater, Dick Murdoch, seeing them when they were at their height, just beating the living hell out of people, and then seeing them lose in like 3 minutes to some new wrestler who has the body of a bodybuilder but can't throw an arm drag to save his life. And yeah, that's how it is. The older generation passes the torch, and you're still getting paid. And yes, you know, like Ron Garvin used to say, Ronnie Garvin used to, Hands of Stone Ron Garvin used to say, you know, in his shooter interviews, he's like, I got paid, I don't care. He's like, it was a job. Who cares about titles? Who cares about the belt? I get paid. You want me to lose? I'll lose. You want me to do this? I'll do this. Just pay me. And he got paid. He made a lot of money doing it. But as a fan, sometimes when you get behind one wrestler and you progress through his career, it's kind of sad to see them in that position. You know, that's why I'm glad somebody like Bruno went out on top. Somebody like Nick Bockwinkel kind of went out on top. You know, Harley Race probably would have kept going if he didn't get injured. But he kind of went out on top. Became a very good manager. He had a brief WWF run that wasn't the greatest thing in the world because he needed the money. You know, he jobbed a bunch of times, but... you know, he still was Harley Race. You know, he still was impressive. He was only losing to, like, guys like Hogan and Warrior. But it's sad to see that. And I mean, I guess it's like watching your grandparents or parents get older and they're not the same as they were when they were young. And then you look in the mirror at yourself and it's the same thing. You're not who you were when you were young. But when you're looking at an athlete, you look at somebody like John Elway or, you know, Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, Wayne Gretzky, you know, it's rough seeing them as old men now. And, you know, even Tiger Woods is getting to the end of his career. I mean, Jack Nicklaus, my father said it was rough seeing Nicklaus towards the end of his career. My father saw Babe Ruth at the end of his career, and that was heartbreaking to a lot of people. You know, his last few years where he wasn't the same as he was in his prime, and I guess pride, money, whatever. But I'm kind of the type of person that would have just walked away and just said, "Yeah, that's enough. I'm done." I mean, it's rough seeing that your childhood heroes get old. I guess. It's like watching your dog get old, or your snail, or your, you know, your favorite actor or actress getting old, and you realize, you know, or even yourself. I mean, I still remember a lot of things I did when I was in high school, and I look back and I go, my God, I was so young. I was so active, so much more whatever. And I look at myself now, and, you know, I'm not bedridden, but, you know, I have the issue with the legs from the flushing bacteria and all that stuff. And I'm like, I can't do what I used to be able to do back then. And it's rough. You face your own mortality. But it's what you make of the time you have now. And that's why I always have a problem with people who are bitter or angry because their life didn't turn out the way they wanted, and they take it out on everybody else. Whether it's a parent or a friend or a wife or a coworker or a child. You know, if you're not where you wanted to be in your life, you can do three things about it. Accept it and live. Want to do something about it and change it, or do nothing and lash out at everybody. And the people that lash out at people, they're just doing it because, you know, they look at their lives and they think it's unfair. They weren't given the things other people were given. They lost things that other people didn't lose. That they don't think it's fair that they did all this and now they don't have this. And they have no friends. They have... They're cowards when it comes to living life. They live in a sheltered bubble. And they lash out at people. And they're angry. And they lash out at people who are supposed to take care of them and love them. And a lot of times, those people that they lash out to eventually throw their hands up and give up on them. And just say, you know, I can't do this anymore. I can't help you anymore. I can't be here for you anymore. Because every time we talk, it's a knife fight. Now, and what do? You just got to walk away. And you have to, because it's your own sanity that is the most important thing. It's your own mental and emotional health that is the most important thing. And to let somebody else's misery in their life bring you down because they're lashing out at you because they're angry at themselves, just walk away, man. Let them lash out and just walk away. It's going to make them more angry because they're going to think that you're condescending to them. And they'll probably call you names that they normally wouldn't and stuff. But you know what? The hell with them. You can only care so much before you just give up. And everybody, I think, reaches that point at some time. But you got to worry about your own mental health. You got to worry about your own emotional well-being. You know, and not somebody else's, whether it's a parent or a child or a husband or wife or brother or sister. I guess even your dog could do that to you. I don't know. But, you know, everybody, we're only here for a limited amount of time. And wasting that time by being toxic, by lashing out at people, by calling them names, by mistreating them, by making what was a happy day a very depressed one, because, you know, if I'm miserable, you have to be miserable. I mean, that's, what are you going to do, you know? There's a point where you just walk away and you go fend for yourself. And then just don't worry about it. You know, that's kind of what you have to do sometimes, but there you go. I went off on a tangent. I was talking about athletes who stick around too long. Yeah, but anyway, so, man, that's how it is, you know, type of thing. But what are you going to do? Life goes on, and the only thing you do is just live your best one, I guess. So I went out the other night, and I had the best gin and tonic. Love gin and tonic. It's got to be Bombay Sapphire gin. It's the only gin I drink. It's got to be that, or else I'm not going to touch it. Bombay Sapphire all the way. This is how it is. But it's good. It's good to go out sometimes and smoke a cigar and drink some gin and tonic and just chill with friends and just enjoy the evening. You know. Love gin and tonic, though. I was kind of in the mood for a cheesesteak today. I just didn't do it, but yeah, I knew. So, Godzilla vs. Kong, I think, opens up here in Japan in this week or something, or the weekend. I've been binge-watching Godzilla movies. I've been binge-watching, like, all the old ones, like, you know, the original, and then Godzilla vs. Mothra. The original Godzilla versus King Kong, Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, Monster Zero, you know, that type of thing. I love that stuff. I love those. I like Gamera, too. Gamera's that flying turtle. I wish they'd do a crossover, but apparently every few years, like, Gamera was created to rival Godzilla from a rival studio. And Gamera became very popular in his own right, but he was geared more towards children. It was a children's thing. And so Godzilla, yeah, it was also kids, but, you know, it was more darker, more mature. Gamera was purely for camp and kids. But then, in the 2000s, you know, Godzilla came back. And Gamera came back. And he came back in three of the most incredibly dark, violent, vicious, adult, technologically beautiful works of art type of film that you've ever seen. Gamera Guardian of the Universe, Gamera vs. Legion, and Gamera Revenge of Iris. All directed by the same director. And they are literally like beyond anything you've ever seen before. I mean, from I read way back in the day, I read that when Gamera Guardian of the Universe came out, that Toho had to have an emergency meeting because the movie was so good and so ahead of anything they had done with Godzilla that they were like, how can we make something like this but with Godzilla? That's how good it was. Gamera versus Iris, which is the final film in the Gamera trilogy, is widely considered by even critics who don't necessarily follow, they're called kaiju, like giant monster movies. Even that is considered the best one ever made. Like the original 54 Gojira Godzilla is different. That stands above everything because of what it is. But Gamera, the Revenge of Iris, they say there's nothing, I read recently because like you have the whole MonsterVerse thing out now with the American Godzilla, Godzilla King of Monsters, Godzilla versus Kong, and how great they are, especially Godzilla versus Kong, which is like number one movie in America, in the world, and it saved the American cinema theater industry. They're saying that Gamera Revenge of Iris is still the gold standard, even compared to them. Like, maybe not effects-wise, because it's, like, almost a 30-year-old, like, 20-something-year-old movie. But the cinematography, the story, the themes, the writing is just... The only thing they said that comes close to it is Shin Gojira, which is so out there in left field, because it was made by the same guy who did Neon Genesis Evangelion, which basically is a telling of the creator's psychological breakdown. I mean, Shin Gojira is just... Oh my god. But I wish the whole thing with Gamera is apparently every few years the studio that owns Gamera approaches Toho and goes, hey, you know, why don't we do a crossover here, you know, you know type of thing. And Toho always shoots them down. Like, they don't want to get involved with it. And I don't know whether they're intimidated because of the three Gamera movies, or they just don't see any point in it, because Godzilla's already popular enough. What's he going to do with Gamera? And the only one that could benefit would be Gamera. But I would love to see that, as long as it's I think even the Gamera production company was like, you know, Godzilla can win the fight as long as Gamera's not killed or whatever. You know, kind of like we did with Kong and Kong versus Godzilla. Godzilla won. Even the director said Godzilla won that fight with Kong. I mean, Kong was down, torn up, beaten up, had to be resuscitated. Godzilla kicked the living crap out of him. At the end, they mutually respect each other and go their separate ways. And I'm thinking, so, well, you could do that with Gamera. See, Gamera, like in video game terms, Gamera would be a tank. He takes massive amounts of damage. Like, damage that would, like, kill most any other thing. And then he'll one-shot kill his opponent. Like, he'll get beating after beating. He'll have his shell ripped open, his guts spilled out, limbs amputated. And then he pulls out some weapon that he fires from his mouth or his chest, and it one-shot kills his enemy. That's basically how Gamera is. And there's always been this theory that he's able to do that because of the damage he takes. He absorbs it all throughout the entire film because it charges him up. And then at the end, he just shoots his opponent. Or that he's a masochist. He could be the first masochist giant monster. I don't know. But I'd like to see a Gamera Godzilla thing. That'd be pretty cool. But, yeah, so there you go. So, thank you for listening to Victims of Fun this week. I know it was kind of an unusual episode with Gravy Bones Johnson in the first half, and then a lot of Godzilla nonsense in the second, but like I said, you know, we never plan these things. We just turn the mic on and we go, and, you know, it's kind of, I actually got an email from somebody who said, you know, you should start talking about politics and, like, recent events and everything, and, you know, you might build your listenership up more because people will be interested in that. Yeah, I thought about that, but here's the thing. I don't want to alienate half of my audience, because the things I talk about right now, I think are things that no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, you're going to listen to it. I mean, nobody's opposed to giant monsters. You know, you either like pro wrestling or you don't. But if I start talking about politics and the way the world is right now and my personal views on it, I'm gonna piss off half my audience, and they won't listen anymore. And I don't want to do that, because I want this podcast to be something that everybody can listen to, regardless of your political stance, sexual identity, gender identity, religion, location, whatever. I want everybody to be able to listen to this and at least get some entertainment out of it. I don't want to alienate people, and I don't think that, I'm not a celebrity, but I don't think people, celebrity-type people, should be pushing their views on others. That's like, I don't like the whole Hollywood thing of them lecturing people, like Leonardo DiCaprio lecturing everybody about the environment, and then he has a private jet in a private yacht that's basically the size of an ocean liner. And has one of the biggest carbon footprints on the planet, but yet he's telling people, you know, you should shut your lights out and your air conditioning off and you should eat vegetables. And it's just, no, dude, shut up. You know, just, people are going to have their opinions, they're going to have their beliefs, and don't try to force other people to, like, think or feel the same way you do, and don't punish people who don't think the way you do. But that's a lot of what I see now. Like, you can't say or do anything without somebody getting upset or somebody getting offended or somebody getting angry. So the best thing to do, other than handing control of the world over to me, which would be the best thing you could do is just not talk about it. I don't like using the word safe space because I think it's stupid, but, I mean, this podcast kind of is that because I want everybody to listen to it. I want everybody to be happy with it or hate it or whatever, but I don't want people to dislike it because I said something that they don't agree with or that offended them. All right? I mean, I have my own beliefs. I keep them myself. And I just talk about things I like to talk about that aren't going to offend people. So I'm not going to bring everyday events and politics into it. And yeah, I could And I might grow my listenership bigger, but I'm not going to alienate people who otherwise might find this entertaining, because they're going to think, oh God, any minute now he's going to start talking about this issue and then I'm going to have to turn it off. Or who will never tune in again once I say something they don't like, and they may miss something that, you know, they could find amusing. So I'm not going to do it. I'll build my audience on word of mouth and the little bit of advertising I do, and quantity and quality. And if people listen, great. If they don't, fine. But I'm not going to betray what I believe in, and I'm not going to anger or alienate people just to get thousands of viewers. I'm not going to do it. There's no point in that. Why gain everything if you lose your soul at the same time? You know? That's from the Bible, by the way. I think it's the Book of Mark. Anyway, so we'll see you next time on Victims of Fun. I hope you all have a safe, wonderful day. Remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just do a search for Victims of Fun, because it's Victims of Fun across all three platforms. And there you go. And I might set up a WordPress blog site for this thing, maybe this week. I gotta see if I have time. You know, I'm not, I still, the Twitch thing, I can't figure that out, but eventually I will. But anyway, so, you have a nice day, nice night, whatever, we'll talk again. Remember, love each other. Bye-bye.